side with the key.
Log Talk Radio.
Missing child alert. Hi, this is George Anthony, grandfather of missing 2-year-old Kaylee Marie Anthony. She was last seen June 16, 2008. She is 3 feet tall, has big hazel eyes and brown hair. She could be anywhere. Please help me and my family bring her home for her third birthday. Any information that you provide will be completely confidential and anonymous. There will be a $225,000 reward for information that leads to the safe return of Kaylee. Press 1 now to be connected to a live representative and help us bring Kaylee home. Or for more information, visit our website at www.helpfindkaylee.com or call 1-800-423-8477.
Good evening and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Barr, and tonight, live from Orlando, Florida, we bring you the Casey Anthony trial. Our guests will be taking your calls in a little while. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click tonight's show. Our guests tonight, we welcome back Dr. Lillian Glass, communication and body language expert, Dr. Lawrence Kobolinski, forensic expert, Shelley Schaefer, forensic professor and criminal investigator, James Copenhaver, private investigator, and Eric Dubois, criminal defense attorney out of Orlando. Welcome back to everyone.
Great to be
Hello.
Here. Pleasure.
Eric, let's start with you. What do you make of today's explanation of what happened on Saturday when Judge Perry called for an early recess before the day even got going?
Well, obviously when a defendant's mental competency and their ability to understand what's going on, a defendant has to be able to assist their attorney in their representation, have an understanding of what's going on, of the proceedings, the severity of the proceedings that they're facing, the penalties, what the witnesses are testifying about, and whatever Casey said to one of her defense attorneys or the team caused them to bring it up to Judge Perry that they had concerns over her ability to perceive and understand the severity of the situation that she finds herself in and her ability to continue this trial. And the judge did what he had to do because it would have been a huge appellate issue had he not stopped the trial immediately and had her evaluated. He had her evaluated by three doctors. They gave the report Sunday. He read them and rendered his opinion based on those reports that she was competent to stand trial. She understood what was going on, and we're going to move forward. I don't think anyone could have ever guessed that that's what the issue was.
It didn't appear that any of the media or anybody had guessed, and I, even on this show, we took bets, and I don't think any of us won that bet. So, quote unquote, we're recessing for a legal issue. Both sides agreed. Do you think that the defense put their client up in order to say, listen, I need some time? Do you think it sparked something in her? She needed to see a doctor or something after the testimony of Lee on Friday. What do you make of how that shifted so quickly and how quickly the judge dismissed the court for the day?
I would hope to God that once the defense team did not put her up to it, because it's a grievable issue and probably would render disbarment by the Florida Bar to stop a proceeding based on that. They have to have a good faith basis to make that representation to the court, and the judge has to stop the proceeding. If the representation is made, especially in a death penalty, to get the defendant evaluated, because that is a huge appealable issue. And the last thing Judge Perry wants is this coming back to his desk on an appeal, that he didn't undergo a psychiatric evaluation. I don't think that the state attorney's office was entirely surprised, and I would be very very concerned if Jose Baez, Chaney Mason, and just said, we need to buy ourselves 24 hours. Casey, act crazy.
Do you think that in regards to them, you know, she was seen by three doctors, a psychiatrist and two forensic psychologists, I believe. And she's obviously fit to stand trial. Does that make her fit to go on the stand?
Well, you know, I think she's going to, yes. I mean, I think she's going to be able to take the stand. Now, the question is, that may have led to the defense saying, you know what, she may not understand what's going on. She may be insisting on taking the stand, and the defense team is like, no, you can't take the stand. The jury's seen you lying. They're not. You have no credibility. Anything you say, and she just doesn't get that. And they can say, you know what, maybe she doesn't understand what's really going on. Judge, we got an issue. And the reason he did three was, you know, that way the odds of all, you know, all three coming back, you know, that she's crazy. You know, if one came back she was crazy, then the defense would say, well, we, you know, or the state would say, we want her evaluated again by our expert. And then there'd be another second opinion. And then if that one came back that she wasn't, now you've got one for, one against, well, we need a third person. Let's just get three done. I don't know how Judge Perry was able to organize that on a Saturday afternoon and get the reports done by Sunday night, but that's great.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Right.
Dr. Glass, let me ask you.
Yes.
When the lead detective, Yuri Millage, took the stand today, in your professional opinion, what do you make of his demeanor towards the jury and his way of delivering his testimony?
Well, today was very unusual because he was a little off his game. He kind of had parrot-like behaviors where he would turn his head abruptly and then mechanically turn it away, and it didn't make sense. There was no flow. There was something very strange about him today in terms of how he came across. And one thing I just also wanted to add what Eric was talking about. There is a clip out there where Casey is enraged Saturday, and you can really see the horrible anger, kind of similar to what we saw in the jailhouse tapes. And you wonder, who is that anger directed to? It might be directed towards Chaney Mason. In any event, now we understand why. Maybe she did want to testify, and they said, I don't think you know what you're talking about, and let me definitely, you know, bring this up. And then here she had three psychiatrists. She, when she walked in the courtroom today, she was like a little pig in mud. She was so happy. I have not seen her this happy since the beginning of the trial. Mm-hmm. She's beaming. I mean, beaming with the cheeks highly raised, just laughing, smiling,
confident.
Just filled, confident, cocky. And then the judge said that she is confident, and suddenly her whole demeanor changed.
Yeah,
like
Nancy just
person.
Had that on. Nancy Grace on HLN just showed a slow motion picture of her demeanor, and it reminded me of the look we got in the courtroom on the Amber Dubois case in San Diego from Jordan Gardner. And it's a look that can kill when you look at it slow.
I mean, you wonder, is that the face that poor little Kaylee saw? Was that the last facial expression that she saw when she died? You know, you wonder.
Interesting. Well, throughout the day, I think the jurors definitely got, they were on their up and down roller coaster as well. Gabe Travers from NBC's West 2 News in Orlando posted many tweets throughout the day, and jurors, when Dominic Casey took the stand, the PI that worked once for the defense, Jose Baez, and then later with the Anthonys, he people were getting a hoot out of him. The jurors were sipping water and taking notes and laughing and smirking and all of that. Do you think they were laughing at him, or do you think they were just laughing because they're overtired and they can't believe the kind of witnesses on the stand?
Now, was this Hoover or you're talking about?
No, or this Dominic is Casey? Dominic Casey.
Dominic Casey. Dominic Casey was putting people to sleep. I mean, his demeanor, the way he spoke, was so boring. It was difficult to follow at times. And I think maybe they were just trying to stay awake because his cadence was rather hypnotic and very strange.
Interesting. We'll get back to Dominic because he's the hit of the show tonight. But let's go with Hoover, or actually let's go to the doctor. What was your take on the doctor? Do you find him credible? Do you find his body language as a professional or an expert witness in your professional opinion?
I do. I think he did his best to answer the questions. I think he's very competent, and he did his best. I think he... I don't think he had anything to hide or any agenda. It was kind of interesting how he kind of turned towards the prosecution. You know, Mr. Ashton certainly has a way to do some things like that. But I think he came across very, very professional, and he was not a problem in terms of credibility, in my view.
Dr. Kobolinsky,
yes.
The chemist, did discuss a lot about the smells, the bag of garbage. And as I was listening, what evidence do we have that any food particles, leftover pizza, cheese, salami, bologna, whatever was left in, as the defense made a clear point, the clean garbage of college students, what evidence do we have that for the 2 days it sat in the trash bin until the deputy went back to pick it out of the trash, that rats and animals did not do stuff with leftover food particles?
I don't think we have any knowledge about that whatsoever. I think the doctor you're referring to is Ken Furton, right? He spoke
mm-hmm.
early this morning. Is that right?
Right.
He's an extraordinary professional and an excellent chemist. And I believe that his purpose on the stand, being called by the defense, was to raise issues with Dr. Vass's conclusions. To raise issues with his technology and his technique, his methodology. And I think that I've been saying this all along, the defense's approach is to neutralize any and all of the science brought forth by the state. I said very early on that I thought that Dr. Vass's work was not ready for prime time and really needed validation and should not have been used in a capital case. And I think that Ken Furton supports that idea and pointed out that there was a right way to do this. I think we heard a number of experts talk about the scientific approach to solving questions related to, you know, the crime. And it is the need for controls is something obvious. Any scientist would be able to address that issue. And so lots of holes seems to have been poked in the case. I don't think the defense really – I mean, the burden is not on them. The burden is on the state, and the state is bringing scientists forward to prove their points. And I think the fact that they've not only been neutralized, but I think if the jury was awake and paying attention, they would have a whole different mindset about what the state's case is all about.
All right, you got it?
Point by point, element by element, the defense has challenged and neutralized the state's case. I mean, even to go so far is their mechanism of murder the duct tape, the chloroform, I mean, that's all been neutralized. So I think the state's not in very good shape right now, despite Ashton's extraordinary zealous attitude about the state's case and keeping out expert testimony based on a lot of technicalities. Jose has managed to get in everything he seems to want to get in. So I think that this has been another pretty strong day for the defense. And Casey, the PI, I don't know what's going through the jury's minds, but it certainly, again, raises the issue about perhaps the skeletal remains were moved and put there at a later date, or I should say at an earlier date than the state.
You've mentioned before about the air sample and air in a can, if you will. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on that a little bit in regards to every single one of the witnesses that Jose Baez has had. They have all, from all the way up to the student, the Huntington, to all the way to, Dr. Spitz. It doesn't matter what expert, how many years you've been doing this, all of that. Every one of them said they didn't get a chance to view the evidence, and the majority of the people that are testifying for the defense in this capital case had only photos to go by,
right,
or reports. I know I've asked you this before, but especially in a capital case, isn't that just not right with justice? This show is about voices for justice.
Well, it's justice is about having a level playing field. And, in the law, I mean, it's pretty clear that the defense is entitled to do an independent evaluation of any physical evidence brought by the state. And giving them photographs as opposed to allowing them on the scene to look at it as it's happening, it's very difficult for the defense experts to do this. And then you are also in a situation where you write a report, and then, perhaps additional information comes forward and you would like to opine what your expert opinion is, and then that's blocked by the technicality of the judge's ruling. The judge does not want any testimony that's not written in a report. I mean, isn't this supposed to be a search for the truth, a search for facts? And if you don't allow the experts on the defense to give their opinions, how is this a search for the truth? I mean, the more we hear, the better. How is it justice?
Exactly.
There's no level playing field.
Exactly. The question in regards to the trash that, was basically the forensics that were discussed today. Yes, I agree that Judge Perry allows somewhat of the evidence to come in, but then when Jose tries to ask the questions, he doesn't get that far with having that ability. And in regards to the trash and the decomposing body, on June 16th, supposedly this child was killed, murdered, accidental death, what have you, put in a car with trash. Then we know that car all that month was driven by Casey and nobody was alerted to any smells from her family to her friends. Then on June 27th, she dumps the car at Amscot, leaves it there. Three people have access to the vehicle during those 3 days, and no smell, no alerts. And then it's taken to the pound where George picks it up almost a month to the day, 15, 20 days that it's sitting there. Then the tow truck driver says, here's your source of smell. It's the trash. He takes the trash out. Now, Ashton tried to show that when you take the trash out, the smell should have gone with it. But then the doctor said, well, what if there was a leak in the bag? Well, I go back to 18, 20 days ago where Ashton made everyone believe that there was holes in the bags that Kaylee was in, and that is the reason that it still smells like death in the car. And yet, we've had you on the show plenty of times, and there was no DNA in any of the three bags she supposedly wore in or on that garbage bag. So how do we dispute the garbage if the judge doesn't allow him to dispute it because of Ashton's objections?
Yeah, I'm very troubled by the defense being shut down and not permitted to pursue fully what they are trying to pursue. I don't think that this is the way we can find out what really happened. I think the issue that you raised about the length of time that allegedly Kaylee was in the vehicle and yet there was no smell, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Bodies decompose and they start to break down almost immediately, although they don't start smelling immediately. It does take a few days, and in the heat of Florida and being in a closed environment, you would expect the smell of putrefaction and decomposition to be present much, much earlier than the time frame you just specified. Something just doesn't fit right. And I think that we don't have the whole picture is what I'm trying to say. We don't have the real timeline of what happened.
And if I may piggyback on something that Dr. Kobolinski said earlier, the chemist was testifying, and he was attempting to say, and I believe you said this, Dr. Kobolinski, correct me if I'm wrong, that the remains were there, you know, in the correct amount of time, that they were placed there earlier than December 11th when they were found. However, then I think that was disputed by James Hoover's testimony and his videotape that showed nothing in those woods. So that's even more confusing for us.
Yeah, I think there are actually some issues about whether Hoover and Casey actually were in the area specifically where the body was located. And, you know, this can go back and forth because, you know, this happened a long time ago and people's memories aren't there and they didn't make measurements and they don't really have very good documentation of where they searched as compared to where the body was found. So these are things that we really don't have a very good handle on. But it certainly is a point that the defense will certainly take care of, and it certainly raises more doubt about the scenario posed by the prosecution.
I want to go ahead, Eric.
I can just touch on that for 1 second. The car was found at an Amscot on the corner of a major intersection, where there's a Quiznos sub, there's a Burger King right next to it, and there's an Amscot that is very heavily traveled because my law office is right around the corner from it. Why didn't anyone from those businesses smell the smell?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
Why didn't the tow truck driver or Tony Lazzaro or the Amscot manager smell anything?
He smelled 8 bodies, the tow truck driver. By his own testimony, he smelled 8 decomposing bodies. But
he smelled that when he approached the vehicle on July 15th with George Anthony to open the vehicle. He didn't smell
before.
It when he picked up the car.
Right. And that's, I mean, those are just issues that I think, like Dr. Kobolinski is saying, don't make sense.
So, Dr. Glass, when you see Jose Baez, like today, the other attorney, Ann, and when Cheney speaks, you know, there's a different rapport and there's more, less objections, to their when they're cross-examining a witness. But when Jose's up there, what do you make of the fact that the judge a lot of the time does say sustain, and on a lot of the stuff that he knows he can poke holes in, he doesn't have that opportunity?
Well, it's interesting because, you do see Jose Baez fumbling up there. You do see him stammering and you know, he doesn't really have that experience, and it shows. He's doing the best with what he has, but for some it's not good enough. And then, you know, you do see somebody like Chaney Mason. He comes across very articulate, kind of in a folksy way. And then you see what happened with Linda, with Miss Fennell today, and she's very professional and really knows what she's doing. You get a very strong confidence level from her. And but I guess it is interesting to watch the three attorneys up there. I don't think that Jose is not likable. I do think the jury, even though they may see his incompetence at time, I think he is coming across a lot more likable than we expected.
Well, he's not cocky like Ashton is, so they may appreciate that a little bit more.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think Ashton's anger and his hostility and the way he grills people, instead of having that kind of smooth approach that Jose Baez does, is alienating to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree. Especially, do you have more women on that jury than men?
I think so.
Michelle, the way I look at it, you know, the art of direct and cross-examination is just that. It's an art. And I think when Jeff Ashton gets up and objects and he gets a couple objections sustained, it kind of rattles Baez because of his lack of experience of
mm-hmm.
these types of cases and how to ask the questions that aren't leading or call for speculation or argumentative, and he gets rattled. And you're not going to rattle a Chaney Mason. You're not going to rattle an Ann Fennell. But even
that is
Deborah,
true.
You know, Deborah, when she was up a couple times doing her, she seemed to be a little rattled a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what to experience.
Nancy Grace mentioned this evening that how did Hoover and Dominic Casey know where to look? And I want to explore this a little bit because. Hello?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah. Did somebody say hello?
No, I think it's interesting that you bring that up because Cindy talked about the woods way back. In fact,
mm-hmm.
when she Sergeant Allen, she mentioned on, she called him up. And it's on
mm-hmm.
video, it's on YouTube, where she talked about the woods. And the woods weren't even a consideration then. So you wonder if Casey may have said something to her, and then she brought
it
up.
No, the woods were, sorry to cut you off, Dr. Glass. The woods were a consideration from early on, because there were so many searches of that area by police. I believe they searched it four times. You also had volunteers out there constantly. You had EquiSearch out there. You also had canine dogs, and you had a psychic out there, and you had Dominic Casey three times. So they were searched quite a bit. But my concern was, you know, yeah, you're right. How did they know to go back there, especially on November 15th? And this is where I want to bring in James. James, are you with us? Oh, okay. I thought James was with us tonight.
I'm here, Michelle.
Oh, you are. Okay, fantastic. I want to ask you a couple things because, you know, I sat back and watched the testimony of Jim Hoover, and he, like I said early on, from my standpoint, he may not make a good witness. He may, and he talks fast like that all the time. So that's his normal demeanor. But he was telling the truth, and I know that because I was, you know, in with all of them at that time. So I believed everything he had to say. And yet when Dominic Casey got on there, there were so many things coming out of his mouth that were far-fetched and stretched or a lie. And I want to ask you from a private investigation standpoint, he made mention that he used to park down by the elementary school at the dead end of Suburban Drive and point his car facing back towards Hope Spring Drive. Now, by doing that, that's almost a half a mile from the Anthony's home and completely out of sight. When is the last time you did surveillance of a house to protect your client and not be able to see the house?
Never, ever, ever. I mean, we do stalking cases several times per month. And obviously, I mean, I listened to most of his testimony today, and his main concern were the protesters and the safety for the Anthony family. And mm-hmm. it's just opposite as to what he did in his actions to protect them or to observe what was going on at the house. And I find that very suspicious.
Or he claimed he did. Because most of the time on any soundbite from any of the networks, local or national, you'll always see his truck out front or Hoover's truck. They always parked on the driveway, on the median, or at some times he even parked on the grass as the police car did that night that they arrested Casey. And so when he said that, it was like, wow, why? How could you be protecting them if you're a half a mile away in the dark woods by an elementary school? And so I wanted to get clarification from a private investigator.
Michelle,
and I know that, Shelley, you've done law enforcement, so what's your take on it?
To me it was very strange because there are two entrances into the Anthony's house. One is down that suburban drive, that dead-end street. And if he was so far down, because you can't even see that street from the Anthony's house, and if he was so far down, what was he protecting? And the other, that would leave the other entrance, just, and I don't know the name, I guess that would be Hope Spring Drive, that would leave that other entrance wide open for anybody that wanted to come in. So I don't know what he was watching, but I would like to ask Dr. Glass, you mentioned a little bit, but what did you make of Dominic Casey's demeanor on the stand or body language on the stand, if anything?
Very, very poor. Thank you for asking me that. Very poor. I didn't believe him. I mean, there was something off about him. The cadence, the way he spoke, very odd. Something was not right. Yet the other fellow, Mr. Hoover, even though, yes, he spoke rapidly, he was nervous, he breathed heavily, he was sounding credible. There were no signals of deception. But you did hear a lot of things with Dominic Casey that just did not sound vocally and auditorily right.
Right.
Well, what did you make of some of the eye looks he gave to the jury? And furthermore, somebody, obviously the prosecution or somebody in the audience, the few times that he gave a facial expression to somebody to feel that confidence in knowing that, you know, there may have been somebody out there, kind of like Casey does with her eyebrows at times.
That's called an acknowledgement. When let's say for any of us, if we saw each other in the street, we would raise our eyebrows and say, oh, hi. That's a known greeting when we raise our eyebrows, of acknowledgement. So what happened is somebody on the jury was acknowledging, maybe shaking their head, maybe smiling at him, and he relayed to that. And that's why you have that kind of the upper force that goes up.
And I was not, you know, obviously I was not in court. I'm not in the state. But I had read, and, you know, we can read many, many different things, but someone said those eyebrow raisings and little smirks were towards Cindy Anthony. So I don't know, you know, but that's just what I had read.
Well,
I did not see.
That would have been in a different direction. I think that would have been in a different direction if it was with Cindy. And it's also too far. I think because she's sitting all the way in the back. Hidden. She's purposely hiding and writing whatever she's writing. I don't really think it's that. I mean, because I know there was speculation that they were allegedly carrying on or whatever. But
and I would think he would be kind of foolish to do some kind of eye or facial expression to Cindy with George sitting right next to her.
That's
just
a good
my
point.
Opinion. You know, what also got me, what did you think about, first let me ask you, James, when you do surveillance or you're looking for remains or a body, do you use cameras and video equipment?
Absolutely. I mean, from time to time, especially this case with the magnitude of this case, that's absorbed all of us. You would certainly video, photograph, more importantly, document in a thorough report, Michelle, which I don't think any one of these guys had done. But the answer to that, yes, you want a tape that is probably narrated, and then I would want a tape that's not narrated, so it wouldn't bias anyone. Yeah, it needs to be documented.
Okay, so going on that line, and knowing that Jim Hoover had the video equipment and the cameras, and I know for certain that Dominic Casey knew for certain that he was he was right there on top of
Correct.
Him. He knew he was being video recorded and even made that mention when they finally got to the meet and greet, but we'll get there in a minute. Jim Hoover now has acknowledged the fact that any good private investigator always carries a camera around, and now I've heard from four private investigators that have acknowledged that same theory. However, Dominic Casey sat on the stand and indicated that he's been a private investigator in the state of Florida since March of 2008, when in fact his license became valid January 23rd, 2008, and his website launched the 25th of January, 2008. What do you make, Dr. Glass, of a man that supposedly this famous 20-year veteran in PI work that doesn't even know when he got started?
Well, he could have had a career. He had a strange accent. And at first I was thinking, is this man Australian? And then it was a little strange.
He's from Britain.
Where's he
from? Britain.
Britain? Okay. Well, it sounded very odd. It wasn't anything I could pick up. It wasn't like a definite accent, like he was living in a place for a very long time, and the accent kind of changed over time. So maybe wherever he was living, that's what he did, or maybe he was practicing without a license. That could be the case as well.
Interesting. So then, James, By knowing the fact that there was a camera involved here and they were out there and we saw on the video camera of the way he was punching holes in bags, is that a common practice of private investigators when you're looking for a baby?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very consistent with an appropriate response. I mean, we're out there looking for possible remains. You're looking for clothing.
But
you're looking for anything.
Poking the bags the way he was?
Well, poking the bags, no. I mean, I think the correct scientific or forensic way, and Dr. Kobolewski can back me up on that, would be to very delicately with gloves, with as much little as disturb that bag as you can, is to open it and obviously see what the contents are. You would want to do that, document it with video to prove that you didn't molest or actually plant something there. I mean, you want to preserve that evidence as much as possible.
Interesting. Dr.
I mean, Michelle,
Copeland, we have a question in the chat room in regards to the seven compounds that Dr. Vass found in his testing. Would one expect to find, I cannot pronounce these names, I'm sorry, P-U-T-R-E-S-C-I-N-E?
Putrescine?
Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, cadaverine and putrescine.
Yes, thank you so much, Doctor.
Yeah,
would
these
one
are
expect
chemical,
to find those?
Yeah, these are amino acids that are commonly found in putrefied organic matter. There are mechanisms, chemical mechanisms, for the production of these amino acids. They're not normally found in living things, but organic matter can be converted in such a way that the amino acids are converted to these two very, very pungent substances. Let me also say that it's true that Dr. Vass indicated the presence of a number of chemicals that are hallmarks of decomposition, but there are also chemicals that one would expect to find in decomposition that was not found. So this is, nothing is absolutely black and white here. There's a gray zone. And remember that in Dr. Vass's initial report, he would not stick his neck out and say, this is human decomposition. He said it could be. human decomposition, which is to imply that it might not be human decomposition. So, you know, the if the evidence was 100% clear cut, he would have certainly made that call, but that wasn't the case. And now that there are a number of questions raised about procedure, and certainly the results were not quantitative, they were qualitative, that creates another issue that the defense has taken advantage of.
When you have a judge that obviously is keeping out a lot of hearsay, wouldn't one conclude that because of an observation from lay people, it smells like there's been a dead body in the car, and that's a figure of speech? What died here? Dang, it stinks in here. What died here? So if somebody does say that and they're not an expert, mm-hmm. how can we allow that into evidence as anything but hearsay and somebody's opinion that evidence such as chemistry and science cannot back up?
Well, you know, I must say I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an attorney, and I can't – it's difficult for me to second judge, to come back and weigh what the judge's decisions are as to what's admissible and what is not. But certainly where experts are involved in a case, they are different than lay witnesses, and they are – entitled to provide their expert opinion as long as it's based on a solid scientific foundation. I mean, I'm disturbed that was somewhat blocked by the judge's decision. And again, let's just refresh the memory of our listeners that this decision by the judge that an expert cannot testify to something not in their report is something unique to this trial. That is not the case in any other court that I'm familiar with and any other state that I'm aware of. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't intend to do lawyerly business or commentating, but I do think something seems just off of what it should be here. I think experts are there. They serve a purpose. They provide the jury with information that they need to hear, whether it's for the state or the defense, and they should be permitted to say what their opinions are. That's not hearsay. It's based on their scientific opinions. They're experts, deemed experts by the court. And so if you really want the truth, let them talk.
Eric? Speaking from an attorney standpoint,
What Dr. Kobolinsky said is absolutely correct. Typically, an expert can testify as to what their findings are. Typically, a defense expert doesn't produce a report. The defense lists the expert, and if the state wants to depose them, the state can depose them. The state has unlimited resources to depose them and to find out what they're going to testify about. And typically, a defense expert's testimony may change a little bit to rebut what a state's expert testifies to in the state's case in chief. But part of the problem that Judge Perry was faced with in this case was you had both sides at the beginning of this trial, when it was under Judge Strickland, had experts on TV saying this and saying that, but neither one would say, oh, yes, they've been retained by the defense or they've been retained by the state as an expert. So we had people, talking to all the media heads on CNN and in session and blah, 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 about this is what we found. And then you ask Jose Baez, who are your experts? Oh, we haven't decided on any yet. So the judge said, okay, enough's enough. We're not going to play this Matlock game of, gotcha moment. And as Judge Perry said, we're going to say you've got to have your experts done and they've got to issue a report. I think part of the problem that the defense has run into is their experts were producing reports in a timely fashion, and Judge Perry believes, because Judge Ashton has argued it over and over and over, that Jose Baez told them, don't put that in your report and we'll just get it in. Now, that'll be dealt with after the trial, I don't know if this is reversible error or not, but some of these experts, and Judge Perry, I think, has been more than gracious in allowing, you know, delaying testimony, allowing time for to get depositions, so Casey Anthony isn't prejudiced at all. Because that's his biggest issue, is he doesn't want to exclude any exculpatory evidence or exculpatory testimony and harm Casey Anthony. I mean, it's her life that's on the line, and he's got to make sure that she gets a fair trial. Whether or not, you know, the defense team has been incompetent, or it's, you know, witnesses are trying to, you know, violate some standing court order, he'll deal with that after the trial, and he's made that abundantly clear. I think he's done a decent job with handling the whole expert issue, especially in light of what was going on early on in the case.
I have a question. Saturday, you know, the legal issue came up and the court was canceled. Now, I was under the impression that the legal issue was for phone records, and then we did find out that Casey went through some psychological and psychiatric testing, which could have been the legal issue. But why did, or does anybody have any ideas as to why the phone records wasn't brought up again today? Like, it just kind of bypassed.
Yuri Melich, I think Jose Baez, when he recalled Yuri Melich as one of the first witnesses, corrected his prior testimony about the cell phone records, that he only requested the cell phone records of Ray Kronk from June 1 to July 1 or something like that, and didn't go all the way to December. And then Baez jumped all over him about, well, why didn't you? Why didn't you get the cell phone records for December? Why didn't you? Didn't you think it was important?
I think that's how he expressed that. Okay, thank you. And could the psychiatric testing have gone on because they are wanting to put Casey on the stand?
I think part of it may have been that she wants to take the stand, and the defense team is saying, no, 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 you can't take the stand because no one's going to believe you. And she's arguing with them, and that's what triggered them to say, she may not understand the gravity of the situation. She may not understand what's really going on and how, you know, Lee's testimony may hurt her, or this testimony, you know, if she gets up there, no one's going to believe her. And if she's adamant about taking the stand.
Right.
You know,
one of the things that I want to say here is that she feels so cocky. She feels so empowered after watching everybody on the stand. She probably figures, hey, I can do it. No problem. I'm sure I could bash him. And this is just her mindset that we've seen throughout for the past 3 years. There's this cockiness. There's this narcissism, this so much caring about herself that we've seen in so many ways.
Well, Michelle, this is Larry. Let me just say this. I think that it would be the biggest mistake for her to appear on the stand during this aspect.
I agree with you 100%.
I think that if in the event she is convicted and it comes to the next phase, the sentencing phase, I think at that point she certainly will have to take the stand. But at this stage, I think it would be a disaster for the defense case.
Well, yeah, I completely concur with you on that one.
She'll do it anyway. She will insist. When you saw that, her getting so angry and upset, I mean, that's probably why they had the three psychiatrists involved.
Could she have been upset because she was reading the reports from the doctors from the weekend? Could she have been upset based on what they were concluding of their findings?
Well, that was today, but then there was something happening on Saturday where she was just very, very disturbed and rageful. And so it's like she wants to do it. She's a controlling young lady. I mean, we've seen evidence of that. And we've seen evidence with Cindy. I know you know Cindy better than anyone, but we've seen her certainly in the media, and we've seen her on the stand. And the control issue, you know, I get a lot from my bloggers every day, you know, what kind of a control freak she is. And this may be Casey's personality as well.
Was her rage on Saturday or was it on Friday after Lee took the stand?
It was down on Friday.
Whatever it was, the rage that came out of her, the point I was trying to say is that the rage was so unbelievably intense, which says, you know, if Casey wants something, Casey's gonna get it. Casey's gonna make sure she does, and it certainly showed.
And I think her cockiness.
So, James, let me ask you, in regards to two private investigators, you know, going out looking. You know, I don't believe for a minute he was on the phone with a psychic. You know, I've not met a good psychic, because if she was pointing him into the same direction, a good psychic would have brought him right to the body. So, but, you know, what do you make of the fact that we really don't know right now who he was on the phone with and who was directing him there? But as Nancy Grace said tonight, why were they there a month? But my biggest question is, that was a month prior. Why was Leonard Padilla on Nancy Grace's show the night before the remains were found and said something would be found?
Well, I think it all comes back to what we've all discussed for the last couple of weeks or even a couple of months. I mean, it's coming from a non-believing conspiracy person. I just don't believe in a lot of conspiracies. As much as I don't want to believe, everything points to some type of either cover-up, more players involved than have been exposed. I would love to see Dominic Casey's phone records to see who he was talking to. You know, you've got so many cast of characters. You've got Kronk, who I truly question. James Hoover, I hate to disagree with you, but, I mean, he just showed up and interjected himself into this case. So what is
well,
his true
so did
story?
I.
Well, but,
so do I. So did I, but did I cause any riffles?
Absolutely.
No, I was there
not.
To help, and I left, and he just happens to live there.
And, Michelle, here to sum it up on the PIs today, I was somewhat embarrassed. I mean, I spent 4 hours after work with one of my guys who screwed up on a report, and I made him stay after and correct it. It's all about details, and if these guys would have written a complete, concise report, we would have known the truth. I mean, it would have been part of the discovery. And we wouldn't be sitting here wondering what the true motives or who called the PIs and led them to this area. It's just bizarre. I do question the bounty hunter. I mean, he's a self-proclaimed world-famous bounty hunter. But this, so far, I don't think he's – the guy's just – it's another one. I mean, he's interjected himself to make what I think is money. It comes back to Blanchard Park. I mean, I believe with everything in my soul that those toys were planted. I think they're just a cast of players that we're not seeing, because maybe the state's aware of it and they don't want to deep six their case, so they're just going on what they can prove. Talking about reasonable doubt, I mean, good night. If the jury knew the real facts and what we're talking about, there's no way they could get a conviction for her.
Oh, she would be completely off. It would be a mistrial or a hung jury or something.
And Michelle, as corny as this sounds, I mean, it's about justice, and we're not getting our money's worth.
Not for what this case has cost on all levels. Now, Dominic Casey was on the stand, and like I said, there were many things I would have loved to have cross-examined him, but there was one that he mentioned in his interview with Sergeant John Allen a couple years ago, and when it came out and all the media started calling me saying, your name is on page X70 or whatever it was, and he was claiming that he and Hoover were called to that area and then left to come to my hotel and pick me up and put my name in his report to the police, so it is in that report. And for him to still sit on that stand today, despite the fact he didn't say my name and make mention that he had to go to a hotel and pick somebody up, what do you make of it, Dr. Glass, that is embedded into his brain and that never happened?
Well, he believes what he wants to believe, and that is frightening. That is frightening.
I didn't meet him. We had a meet and greet on November 15th, 2008 at the command center, and Sherry Milstead from Kid Finders had picked me up at the airport, picked me up at my hotel, And we were at a Dunkin' Donuts at 8:30 in the morning getting donated donuts and coffee for that meet and greet, and we met the Anthonys at 9 a.m. there. And we were there until 2 o'clock until James Hoover and Dominic Casey and Lee Anthony all showed up hours late. And that's when I first met him.
Well, he obviously collapsed some information, and or he manufactured some information. But this is this is kind of what I was talking about earlier. Again, I picked up that something just wasn't right. The tentativeness of what he was saying, the cadence, it seemed like there were some signals of deception going on somewhere. He did not seem trustworthy to me.
Interesting. So let me ask Eric, when a defense attorney like Jose Baez, obviously he didn't want to question him today, and he had Ann Fennell do it. Do you think that was a risky move to put somebody on the stand that hates you tremendously and believes that you owe them thousands of dollars? And for him to be one of your defense witnesses, isn't that risky?
It's risky, but they needed to get that video in, and they needed to get someone who was in those woods, and he was the only one who was in those woods who can say that body wasn't there, and that, you know, he searched it, and he walked around, and that body wasn't there. I think it was smart that Jose didn't do the questioning. And I also, I just on a whole completely separate note, I thought it was weird that today was Ann Fennell's first day really in the courtroom since opening statement, was her first day in the courtroom since opening statements, and she's supposedly the death penalty expert. Why did they bring her in now?
And why, and she's not going to be in tomorrow, which is kind of odd.
Right. And then she's going to come back on Thursday and argue her motion, which Jose Baez could have filed an open court today on behalf of Ann Fennell. She didn't have to be in court to file it. And, you know, I think the...
I don't understand that.
Why did she question her?
Ann Fennell there, like you said? What's your explanation to help us out? Why she was there in the first place today when she should be there just for the death penalty thing?
It's twofold. One, that, you know, they wanted her to get in the courtroom so Judge Perry could get a feel for her, and she could get a feel for around the courtroom, and the jury could get a feel for her. Because, guys, you know, if the defense perspective, if this thing goes to a sentencing phase, they're going to hear from Ann Fennell a lot, and they need to feel comfortable with her and get to know her a little bit. You can't just throw her in. Here's our death penalty person. This is someone,
you
know.
Or is it because they feel that, nah, she's not going to get the death penalty, so we'll just kind of use our lawyer muscle here? Would that be it too?
I don't think so, because I think, you know, if you're going to use lawyer muscle, I mean, Chaney Mason could have, you know, questioned those two. I mean, if the defense is confident you're not going to get the death penalty, then Ann Fennell never needs to come to Orlando. I mean, she's got better things to do.
Who's the lady in the dark hair that is constantly there? Is she an advocate or something that Casey continues to talk with and smirk with and laugh with?
No, she's an attorney who works in with Chaney Mason's office. She's a newer attorney. Who Chaney Mason has taken under her wing to kind of, you know, show her some of the ropes and teach her a little bit about, you know, criminal defense work in a capital case. But she's a licensed attorney in the state of Florida, and, you know,
Is she the woman whose husband is on death row in Florida?
No.
Yeah, no. Who is that anyway, Eric?
There's someone on the defense team.
I haven't seen her since all the hubbub was made about her husband. She was out, I thought, jury selection one day and then kind of disappeared.
I would have disappeared, too. I don't think I would have even come on to this case to begin with, knowing the media attention with it. You know,
right.
You know, our friends in the media, they can definitely find out anything about somebody. Sometimes I think they're better defense and better investigators than the person handling the investigation. In regards to, you know, that the whole situation with court today, what do you make of the fact that, yes, you do have this individual, Dominic Casey, on the stand, and he is lying, or people have said Cindy perjured herself, or then there's Lee with the waterworks and all of this. Do you think that they've all been prepped to start to stir doubt? Because my concern is, when I spoke with Sergeant Allen to say, listen, this guy has just lied to you, I have receipts to show where I was, I don't know why he's saying he came to meet me at my hotel, and yet it's still in the record and it's still brought into court. To me, that's saying John Allen didn't correct the problem. Jose Baez knew that that was not true. The Anthonys knew that wasn't true, and Dominic knew that wasn't true, and yet it's still being used as if he was with me. I don't like that feeling.
I don't think they've been prepped to stir the pot. I think this is what happens in a circumstantial evidence case when, with all due respect to the state, a lot of the evidence isn't there. You don't have
mm-hmm.
a cause of death. You don't have a, you know, we don't know how the child died. We don't know when the child died. This is what happens in a circumstantial evidence case, and from a defense perspective, they got to throw as much crap against the wall and hope something sticks. And there,
you know, I'm sorry. I have to disagree with you because I think it is stirring the pot. And, you know, as somebody who has helped with witness preparation in my lifetime, I really think that they were coached. I mean, I think they were told how and what and how to behave and how to say and what to do, and we may have been told to cry because it was inappropriate. I mean, the crying didn't fit what he was talking about. But I do think that he was coached. I really do believe it. And maybe it wasn't coached from Jose Baez, but maybe through the Anthony attorney, through Baez. So I think something was done there because their behavior was completely different from the way it was initially.
Well, if
mm-hmm.
whoever coached mm-hmm. these witnesses should be fired, I think, because
Exactly. I offered my services to Baez's office before I left Orlando, and I was told, oh, no, we have our own PR firm. Well, I don't think their PR work has done too good for their defense. We have Sweet Tea for Me in the chat room asking, who is Diane Taylor that Jose Baez asked Milich about today regarding having phone records for Casey's phone? Anybody know?
Was she a friend of Casey's or a random number that came up on the cell phone?
It was a random number that came up on the phone bills, the phone records.
Was she a shot
Diane
girl?
Diane Taylor?
She might have been a shot girl?
Yeah, there were some shot girls and some random phone numbers that kept calling that they traced back, thinking that might have been Zanny the Nanny.
Mm.
Excuse me, Michelle.
Wow.
I have to go.
Thank you for joining us
care.
This evening. And we're
okay,
going to be
Dr.
ending
K.
in a few
Eric.
Minutes, too.
Eric, James,
any last question, Shelley?
No,
care,
I'm
Shelley.
Set for now, and I'll talk to everyone soon, and it was nice
great.
Talking to you all. All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Thank you so much. We'll be ending shortly here, too. If there's anybody in the chat room or listening, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. Let's go around. Do any of you have questions besides of, except the obvious, of course, that who, what, why, and where? But what questions are burning in your expert minds? Dr. Glass?
Well, I've got a lot of
you called me on the spot. I can't think of one. But, you know, I just basically, you know, when you look at everything, you look at Cindy, and I think it's a question to you, Michelle, for what you've gone into. Have you seen a change in Cindy's demeanor? Because she is so unlikable and so disturbing to watch and to observe. And if we're having this, or if I'm having this reaction, and if so many of my bloggers are having this reaction, and so much of society is having that reaction, you know, what do you think that's going to do with the jury, A, and B, you obviously know her better than anyone else. What kind of a person is she, and has she changed?
You know, for the time I've known them, since the summer of 08, she's very caring. Mothering is a very good word I'd use for her. Definitely hospitable, loving, loved that baby. I'm telling you, and I think I heard somebody on Issues with Jane Velez tonight say, a caller said, let's get it right, it wasn't Casey that was feeding and clothing the child. And that is true. You know, if she's stealing for gas money, she obviously didn't have any. And the clothes and the food and the roof over your head did come from George and Cindy. And that child was very much loved by those two. Have I seen a change? Definitely. From the time I got there, you know, at the time I was there, she dropped so much weight. It was spoon feeding her to eat. I see a more, an individual that's paying more attention to every detail and every word that's coming out of everybody's mouth in that courtroom. And I can still say that I feel they told us if they ever found out or had evidence to prove that Casey did any harm whatsoever to Kaylee, they would disown her in a heartbeat. And yet they're sitting in that room each and every day. And that says a lot.
But here's my question to you. Initially, when we first saw Cindy on the stand, she was so hostile, and she didn't even look at Casey, and Casey had a meltdown. And we thought, okay, she's coming clean. She's telling the truth. She's really against
Casey. But that
Casey.
Was on... But she
that
went up there right after Jose made his opening statements.
Well, but whatever. But the point is she's changed her tune. And I think that's what people find disconcerting.
Concerns me, too. I mean, that concerns me, too. I was the first to say to a few people, what is she doing? But I'm not a mother, so I guess I can't really say what I would do in this situation. But if she in her heart and soul believes that Casey is innocent, I'll quote Dr. Dale Archer, who said on this show, those parents will do whatever it takes to get their daughter off.
Right,
so
she already turned on her daughter once, so it's kind of interesting. And then the saying, I love you to Casey, and Casey turns away. So there, you really see that horrible dynamic. But anyway, I just wanted to get your feedback.
See,
so that was my question.
But when she told her she loved her, she didn't turn away. She lifted up her brows
and that was a surprise. That was kind of like, oh, she acknowledged her, but it was surprise, the shoulder shrug. It wasn't like, I love you back. It wasn't a sensitive, caring interaction between the two. There was something
So
it wasn't
I
really...
I definitely would have reacted to my mom in a different light, but my mom's off there sending me to the gas chamber, so...
Well, but she didn't kill anybody, so...
Yeah. It's hard to say, because I'll tell you, I'm the first person to tell all of you that since day one, it's been a roller coaster ride, you know, and what you think is true and who you trust and who you believe, and then every day is a different day. And then watching Dominic Casey deny things that I know he knew about Hoover, it's like, wait a second, if you both are for the defense, why are you throwing the other PI under the bus again? You know, so I don't know who to trust and what to believe anymore, to be honest with you. I just know that the forensics aren't there, the evidence isn't there to show me that this woman did a crime yet until the prosecution can show something other than a character assassination. I want more proof. I want more proof before I turn that button on.
I see. Well, I respect that.
I want proof to show that, yes, the decomposing hair that was in the car not only had chloroform on it and Kaylee's DNA on it and, and some tissue left on it somehow, then okay. But Dr. Kobolinski, correct me if I'm wrong, we can't go there yet, can we?
We cannot. And, Michelle, you asked me if I had any questions. I had more of a statement than a question. So let me say this, that we know there are plenty of innocent people that get convicted and serve lengthy prison terms. And I'm thinking to myself, most of us are pretty fortunate because there are no serious allegations made against us. But it can happen. Any of us could end up, on trial and maybe even for our lives. And I tell you this, I would hate to have a prosecutor like Mr. Ashton, who is not just zealous, I would say overzealous. And I think to a fellow like him, I think it's winning at all costs. And I think that's not what a prosecutor should be about. It should be justice and doing the right thing. And winning or losing shouldn't be important. It's doing justice, and that's why this fellow is a formidable adversary. And one last thing, I hear several of us saying that Jose Baez is incompetent. I wouldn't say he's incompetent at all. I think he's done quite a good job in getting all of his points across, and I think he's been successful in challenging the state's case. I think it's true he's not as experienced as others, but I think he's done an extraordinary job. His concern is not justice, like a prosecutor. His concern is to be a zealous advocate for his client. And I think he's done that, and he's done it well. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens at the end of this week. I guess that's it.
Eric, do you think they're going to close this week?
My understanding is that's why they stayed in court till, 7:30, 7:45 today, because Judge Perry is going to do everything he can to get this to the jury, which, personally, I think is a mistake. But as a defense attorney, I welcome it because I think it's going to yield a defense-friendly verdict because the jury may get the case Friday mid-afternoon or first thing Saturday morning, and they may return a quick verdict to get home to Pinellas County before the 4th of July.
Is it grounds for appeal if they do that? And after the case is all said and done, a juror starts speaking out?
Obviously, if she's acquitted, there's no appeal. It's done.
Right.
If she's convicted, then it could be. I think there's a lot more and more sound grounds for appeal. I think Dr. Voss and the air quality is grounds for appeal. I don't think that passes the Fry test in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I think that right there is one.
Agreed, agreed. And also the graphics I find disturbing.
Right.
The portrayal of the duct tape being used to asphyxiate the child, I think there's no scientific foundation for it. It's only the support of a hunch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and like the defense expert said, you can position that duct tape anywhere on the body.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to say.
And yet, but the diagram that they showed, the layover, they call it, where they showed her face.
The overlay.
Yeah. The overlay showed that the duct tape would go from her nose down to her chin. And if that's the case, then where is the DNA and tissue? Correct, Dr. Kobolinski?
I would agree, and we heard that from the professor himself, Werner Spitz.
Mm-hmm. And yet there wasn't any. And it didn't show any chloroform in the hair that was on the duct tape either, which kind of counteracts or contradicts their theory of all this chloroform that supposedly was in a vehicle that never transferred to the garbage bag.
Right. Sounds like reasonable doubt to me.
It was also inappropriate was to have Casey's picture with the child.
That absolutely.
Take that picture out and then just put the child's picture with Kaylee's picture, not with Casey.
Oh, that's a very good point. Very good
there's
point. I never even thought of that. There is also somebody in the chat room saying that, I didn't realize this, was this Detective Yuri Milich's first missing child case?
I don't know.
Nope. I don't know.
He was head of the, I think he was head of the department in that area, from what I understand.
Huh. Yeah, somebody's writing, it seems like a lot of firsts in this case. First missing child case for Yuri, Dominic Casey's first case, and a PI.
No, not Yuri Melich. He was the head of the children, you know, finding missing children. That was what his job was. He was like the head of it at the police department.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I hope that answers your question, sweet tea. What about you, James? You're a PI and all. What's your take on this entire case and all of the roller coasters?
Well, like I said, I mean, I'm not a fan of Baez, but I have to give him an A for today, or at least the team an A today. I think with the cards that he has been dealt with, I think he's doing a very good job presenting what he can present. I think he is somewhat stifled by the judge. I think the judge, although I've known Perry for a while and he's known as a fair judge, I think he shut Baez down a couple of times that he shouldn't have. Jeff Ashton has, you know, he's a lifelong prosecutor here with Orange County, with the state attorney's office. It is just so evident and personal between he and Baez that we're getting away from justice, and it's a personality conflict between Ashton and Baez. And you know, I mean, he has to do everything he can do to win this case, but it's just a poor cast of characters. And, you know, I just sometimes sit and wonder, what if it was a different defense firm handling this case? Would it have been in court today, or would it have already been settled out? Or possibly would some things have been followed up on which should have been followed up on that weren't followed up on, i.e. a lot of phone records. You know, I'm confident.
Videotapes of airports and...
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got sightings of this little girl a couple of times around the nation, and I knew firsthand, running that command center for Equisearch, we would get tips daily. We would forward those, I personally forward a couple of those tips to John Allen, and nearly was cursed out by him. Hey, we're not looking for a live Kaylee. And, you know, this was a month or so before remains were found. So they completely shut this thing down. I think they...
focused on one individual.
It was definitely, they did not, they had their blinders on. I mean, they were focused, and I think pressure from the government, i.e. the sheriff himself, I think it guided them to the arrest that they made. And I think they acted too quickly under pressure.
It does concern me again, and I go back to the things I know to be true, and certain things like Crime Stoppers, telephone calls and tips that went in there, and things that, again, I know to be true that I've gone to the police about myself, and yet they're still airing them as it's the truth based on the person that gave it. And if you're not fixing that issue, to me, what else are you not fixing? You know what I'm saying? If you lie once on the stand, no matter who you are, whether you're Cindy, Casey, Dominic, or Dr. Kobolinski, if you're going to sit there and say one stretched lie, whether it's a phone record or whatever it is, what else are you lying about? It's like Dr. G. You know, if you haven't dotted your I's and crossed your T's and you've stretched this or you didn't do this and why didn't you open the brain and all of this, what else didn't you do in order to bring closure to this case much sooner than where it got to December 11th?
You know,
and
the one,
totally agree, Michelle.
One thing that people can never forget is the 31 days. And I think once you think of 31 days, whatever little mistakes were made, or this one said this, or this one said that, why did the Casey Anthony not tell somebody in 31 days? And don't tell me grieving, because and people grieve differently. Something was going on. So,
and why was she counting the days?
Exactly. So, you know, this is something that is just very, very suspicious.
We have a caller on the line from an unidentified number. Caller, you're on the line, on the air. Do you have a question? Hello? Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Glass. Sorry.
I just think that is the thing that's going to stick in the jury's mind. Those pictures, you know, her dancing, the Bella Vita. That is what infuriates people. I mean, if it was an accident, why didn't you tell us in the beginning? It's so easy. Mm-hmm. It was an accident. Okay, so manslaughter. What's the problem? Okay, no
big deal. Do you blame the attorney on that too, then, Dr. Glass?
No, I mean,
if he knows that that's the situation 3 years ago, why did she need her day in court?
Because I don't even believe he knew that. I think Casey was leading him down that little primrose path. I think Casey has lied to everybody, including Jose Baez. And you can really see it in their body language, kind of the change when he found out the truth. Suddenly, he wasn't that affectionate and fatherly or communicative with her that much. He was very distant. You know, I think she led him on, too. I think she lied to him, too, because, you know, he wouldn't he was just still talking about Zanny the nanny for years, really, until all of a sudden he realized, wait a minute, there is no Zanny the nanny. So I think she led him astray. I think this is a very disturbed young lady, a very manipulative. I think she's had her way in life very, very easily based on the way she's looked. She's very attractive. Her figure was nice. She probably had the gift of gab. The gift of manipulation, said what people wanted to hear, and she got away with a lot in life.
Well, she also,
how do you explain her doing? How do you explain her daughter dying, and or murder, accidental, what have you? And for somebody that did have the gift of gab, never to tell anybody.
Yeah, because I think this is what basically happened. This is just my theory, okay? My theories, again, I could be completely off. But when we hear the testimony of the boyfriends and we say that one night Kaylee wasn't there, she was in bed with the boyfriends and Kaylee, and then she wasn't there, and then you wonder, what was Casey doing? So she took the little child, put it into the trunk of the car, gave Kaylee a little chloroform to kind of put her out, and maybe she, for whatever reason, put the duct tape over the nose, the mouth, accidentally, maybe she just, instead of putting it over the mouth so the child wouldn't cry, maybe she put it over the nose and the mouth, and then maybe there was kicking going on, hence the high concentration of chloroform in the trunk, and all of a sudden she comes down the next morning, and oh my God, she's dead, what'll I do? And she just ignores it. She kind of, well, nothing, you know, it'll handle itself, or I'll just say that the child's missing, I'll say there's a kidnapping, and that's pretty much what I think went on. And the reason I think that there's some type of, you know, not much of a murder, is even though she was jealous of her, I just don't think that would be her M.O. I just don't think she had that kind of murderous, because she would have done it a lot earlier.
Michelle,
and somebody says totally ridiculous, Dr. Glass. In the chat room.
It probably is pretty ridiculous. It's just a theory, I think. It's just my opinion.
It sounds like a good theory.
It's just a theory. It's just a theory. Again, the other theory is she could have actually taken the child and completely smothered it to death and killed it out of anger, because we have seen that burst of anger. That could happen, too. Again, anything could happen, but that's just one theory. Whatever it is, she's very, very sick and disturbed, and the fact that 31 days went by without telling anybody, and the only reason I brought up my little theory is because with accident, because I heard about accident over a year ago when I was contacted by River Cruise. And River Cruise, I did a body language analysis of her, and she contacted me to thank me, to say, you know, thank you very much for believing in me, because it is true. And we had a lengthy, lengthy conversation. And at that time, I said, so what happened? Because she said she was having an affair with George, and I tended to see that she was credible as she said that. And I said to her, well, tell me, you know, what happened? Did she murder her? Did she smother Kaylee? And she said, well, George just said that it was an accident that snowballed. I said, but what kind of an accident? And then she came up with the fact, well, maybe it was the chloroform, or maybe but no drowning was mentioned. So that's why the drowning seems odd, but that's why kind of I came up with this little thing with the chloroform. So it's a possibility.
Well, the snowball could easily be all the lying, too, and the cover-up. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that, okay, there was an accident, and then she did this, and then it could be that she just kept on lying and lying and lying to cover it up, which would be a snowball effect.
She did say the word accident to me, because I wanted to know what kind of an accident. I want to know exactly what kind, and that's what she said. So, again, and based on what she told me, I do believe that she may have had an affair with George. And based on their ending,
anything is possible in this case, Dr. Glass. Anything is possible. Dr. K, somebody's asking about, can you comment on the partial fingerprint found on the tape?
I'm not aware of a partial fingerprint.
I wasn't either.
But if there was, I can tell you that partial fingerprints, depending upon how much is there and how much is not there, this type of evidence may be of no use whatsoever. It depends how much of a ridge pattern is present in a print. So I've not heard about a fingerprint. In fact, I've heard there were no prints. But if you are correct, it probably means that it's of no consequence because there's too few ridge endings.
There was partial DNA, correct?
There was DNA from one of the examiners, the FBI examiner. It was a contamination. Nothing from Casey, nothing from Kaylee.
Nothing from George,
no
nothing
DNA.
From Cindy,
no.
And nothing from Lee.
Correct.
Interesting. Any last thoughts from any of our panel this evening? And where do you think we're going to go from here? Let's take another bet, Eric.
I think we're up to Roy Kronk. I think he should.
You think
be
he'll take the stand?
I think the defense has to call him.
Absolutely.
He called Orange County Sheriff's Office 3 or 4 times. He's going to talk about the response that Orange County Sheriff's had. Why didn't the Sheriff's Office talk about that? He's got to take the stand to prove or disprove and put it out there for the defense that body wasn't there. He said it was there, but the police searched the area and it wasn't there. And then, you know, it's how do you connect the dots if you're the defense? How do you put this together? I mean, you're probably 72 hours away from making your closing argument. What is it? What's your closing argument? She lied to us also. There wasn't a drowning. We don't know how it really happened. There's no proof of a drowning. But I think Roy Kronk has to take the stand, and I think you may see some more of these detectives coming back from Orange County, the ones that especially went and swept that area after Roy Kronk made the phone calls to testify that they didn't see anything.
Somebody's saying, according to his lawyer, he is supposed to be on the stand tomorrow, and also this individual in the chat room believes Jesse Front will be too.
Okay, well, I'm going to go buy my lotto ticket now.
I'm just curious out of the folks on the panel, I may be the only crazed individual here, but does anyone else think, I mean, knowing what we've learned in court, knowing what we've independently searched and researched and listened to over the past couple of years, if Casey is guilty and she has done something with this child, do you guys believe that she acted alone, or does she have an accomplice that was covered up?
I think she acted alone as a motive. I mean, you know, what? Who else would care about killing a little child but her? She was jealous of the child. She was a burden to her. It seems like it's a slam dunk motive for me that it was just her.
I think she had help.
Really?
Yeah.
Who was that help? Lee?
Lee?
No, who is the help?
I think Lee, I think that might have been some of the tears. He's feeling guilty now about helping and not coming forward. He disappeared for the past 2 years.
I agree with you. I respect what you say, and especially with your position and everything, but Casey is such a narcissist and so selfish. She would never take the whole blame for Lee. I mean, she would bring him down.
Dr. Glass, with all due respect, I'm just going to throw this at you. I've interviewed people my entire adult life for a career. And just my observation, watching Casey's emotions while Lee was testifying, I defined her emotions and read her as, oh, my God, I cannot believe I put my brother in this position. I mean,
really?
I may be totally off base. You're the professional. But I kind of read that from her.
No, it's interesting. If you read that, I respect that.
She looked really sympathetic to him. I mean, it was like she really felt sorry that he's in this position now, and that's just, you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, maybe what you're saying is true, because why did he get immunity? I want to know why he got immunity. I don't understand that.
We'll never know.
Huh?
We'll never know, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that's why he got immunity. Maybe he did help her. I mean, that's a good possibility. I just, from my point of view, I've just seen such a selfish narcissist that cares all about herself. She only cries when it pertains to her. I'm sure Lee would be the last thing on her mind. It's really about herself. So that is interesting.
I'm going to throw this out there. Kaylee died. Casey goes to Lee. Lee, oh, my God, you got to help me. Remember how Mom wouldn't get you involved and didn't get you involved, and she told you it was none of your business? We'll make this our little secret, and Mom and Dad will never know. I mean, that's pure speculation. That's when he broke down on the stand the other day, was when it was, they kept her from me, they told me it wasn't any of my business.
I'm not buying that. When he broke down on the stand, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Glass, but I mean, he was laid back. The only thing missing was his feet up on the desk. I mean, he was laid back, twirling in the chair. He wasn't breaking down like Cindy did.
No, the grieving, the facial expression, you know, whether there were tears or not, there was no facial expression that indicated grief. I think basically it was a show for the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lee has had some, there is something very strange. So, but what you're saying, you know, maybe they're complicit in something with the high five and kissing his little bracelet, saying CMA, CMA at the funeral. Also, he lied on the stand when Ashton said, well, why weren't you emotional earlier when you talked about this? He goes, well, I didn't think Kaylee was dead. Of course he did, because he was the head of the memorial. They've already found the remains. I mean, something.
But Dr. Glass, was it that he didn't really think Kaylee was dead, or is he emotional now because, holy cow, this is coming to pass, my sister may get the death penalty?
Yes, that's it. You've hit the nail on the head. Exactly. I think that's what it is.
I don't know. I mean, Doc, it's just I've watched her emotions throughout this whole trial, and I've not seen her vacillate greatly until he testified. And it's just, in the bottom of my heart, there was something there. And
they looked like they were going through a divorce.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
They looked more attached than brother and sister crying because...
All right, I'll tell you why. What really bothers me about what's being said. There was a time where she cut him off to the bone when admitted that he was manipulating her, that he wasn't telling her the truth. And you saw her jaw drop, and it was like all over. And, you know, he even mouthed at one point, this was months and months ago, and that's when she turned off to him, and you saw it completely. Because, you know, before that, you know, he did have a lot of affection and love towards her, and he was saying, you know, I love you. In fact, Linda Drain Verdick said, is that for me? Or, you know, that was kind of a little laughter in the courtroom. But I think that's when she realized, hey, wait a minute, there, I have no friends. He is not a loyal brother. I could care less. So I think that Casey, from what I've observed, she can't have her own emotions. She kind of mimics people's emotions. And that, so I think she may have mimicked his emotion just like she did with Cindy. You don't see wet tears. You don't see a lot of grieving, and that's disturbing to me.
But you know what you do see? You see a lot of DNA left behind when they start crying. And yet we can't get away from the fact that a child was accidentally drowned or murdered, and yet nobody from that family's DNA is on anything. That floors me.
Hey, Michelle.
That just floors me. Yes.
I never heard Dr. Kobolinski's response. Does he think she acted alone, or did she have an accomplice?
Oh, my goodness.
That's,
you know,
another show,
I'm
right?
Too, Larry. I'm sorry.
I'm going to sneak out of this one by saying the trial's not over yet, and there's a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. I can't really provide an opinion on this. I really can't. I don't know exactly where this case is going to end up, but I think that there have been enough holes in the state's case where I would expect, at the very least, a hung jury.
Interesting. Well, on that note, anybody else want to weigh in before we end tonight's show? Wow, this gets better and better. You know, I'm always lost for words on this show because, especially, like, I've never had a body language expert on before, Dr. Glass. And so since you've come on, I have completely been more in tune with watching. I go from in session to HLN during commercial breaks, or I watch it on WESH 2 live streaming on the internet to make sure I don't miss anybody's body language, because I think that's talking in numbers in this trial.
It'll teach you so much, because when you look at the body language, it tells you a story that's not told.
Yeah, exactly. And I can see a lot more of, oh, okay, if you just hear something and you're not watching the person, but then when you tune into that individual, it's like, holy cow. So you've definitely brought a lot of expert experience to this show. All of you have, and we're always honored that you've joined Voices for Justice. So thank you again, all of you, and we hope you come back, as always. We're going to have our next show on Sunday. I know it's July 3rd, but if the jury's not going to be home enjoying themselves, either are we. So we'll do a recap of week six on July 3rd. So join us at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And so thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you to our listeners also, and those in the chat room. And please continue catching up with past episodes. Download the previous shows today by logging on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Thank you, everyone. Happy 4th of July if we don't speak to any of you.
Great.
Otherwise, we'll talk to some of you on July 3rd and see what else happens this week in the courtroom, floor 23, is it, in Orlando, Florida. So thank you, everyone. We're going to end tonight with Missing Child by Emile, who the folks at Nancy Grace introduced us to. So thank you again.
Bye-bye.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child? I'm a stranger in a strange place, and I don't know how I got here. I'm so far away from home. do, cause I don't know what would happen. Could I make it all alone? If I could get someone's attention, one kind soul to look my way.